Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognize, others you might not. But my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to Abood Al-Jumali, who also goes by the name Bonner O'Lunchy.
But thankfully now, I can talk.
I can talk.
I have the English now, you know, but it was certainly a challenge, because when people ask you a question there and you don't know what to answer, or people could be saying hello to you and you don't have a clue what they're saying. Sorry, when I say, obviously you know what hello is, but let's say how are you keep, for example, you wouldn't know what, I didn't know what that was. But what I done was that I got involved in every single thing, every society.
Yeah.
You go to choir, you'll see me there. You go to drama. So I was acting Jesus Christ once in a Christmas play. With a sheep beside, there's a towel around my head. I didn't know who the hell I was, you know. Just there for the crack. Like, you know, there to see what the story is. And I'm just saying what the teacher's telling me to say.
So you threw yourself into everything.
I attended mass as well. Like, you know, I was even more Catholic than some people here.
Abood lives in Dublin, and his nickname is based on two hurling greats, the Bonner Mar from Tipperary and former player Colin Lynch from Clare. He left his home in Baghdad when he was just 9 years old and came to Ireland with his family 5 years after the American invasion of Iraq in 2003. When he arrived here, he had no English, but he soon developed the distinctive accent that he has today. And in this conversation, we talk about his passion for hurling, his deep faith, his role as a GAA ambassador promoting diversity and inclusion, the culture clashes he's encountered over the years, and his dream of becoming an Irish diplomat someday. Here it is. Abood or Bonner? I'm not really sure what to call you.
Look, if you call me Abood, if you call me Bonner, they're both who I am. So you're both referring to the same person.
So yeah. Tell us about it.
Yeah, the name Bonner, it was inspired by Bonner Mar from Tip.
Yeah.
And the O'Lynchic is the Irish name for Lynch, and inspired by Colin Lynch, who played for Clare back in the 90s, you know. Then I said, okay, I already have the name Bonner, right?
So you were called Bonner by what, your teammates?
Teammates, exactly, okay. Yeah. It's teammates called by Bonner. And then also on the sideline when I'm playing in the local there, people see me, also referred me to Bonner Mar as well.
You know, you're obviously a nice player if you're compared to him.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I'm a good player. But for sure, look, as long as I'm a hurling, that's the main thing, you know, as long as I have the hurling in the hand.
Yeah. So people listening are probably going, right, so in the intro, Sheila said, Dublin, living in Dublin, what's the crack of the accent? I know you're asked about it all the time, but we do need to talk about it, because it is a brilliant melting pot of an accent. I kind of thought first, is he living in Cork? I thought there was a real bang of Cork off the accent. No. Then I thought, is it a bit west? Wait a second. I'm hearing so many different counties in your voice.
As I said to people, as I often say to people, it's an All-Ireland accent. It's All-Ireland accent. And as I said, to keep everyone happy and that.
Bit of everything.
Exactly, bit of everything. So here's the diplomacy coming out of me, you know.
So is it because you learned, important. Did you learn English from people from different parts of the country?
Oh yeah, no, I didn't grow up with any lads from Dublin, like, you know. Like, I grew up with lads from the countryside, so I did. So, it really helped me from that perspective, you know.
Yeah.
And the fact, like, you know, watching videos, traveling across the country and all that sort of stuff. And majority of the people I've worked with are from the country, like, you know, I mean, you know, all of that do take into account.
So at this point, let's now head back to your younger years.
Yeah.
So you came to Ireland when you were 9.
I was 9 years of age, yeah.
But you left your home country at a time when, you know, life was challenging.
Oh, look, it was tough. You know, I mean, the invasion when it happened, the American invasion when it happened in 2003, it was tough, all right, you know.
So you only left a few years after that?
A few years after that, yeah. I left at the peak where there was pretty much two wars going on at the same time. You had the invasion that's obviously already has happened, and you have had troops there and, you know, in place, all pretty much different parts of the country, and specifically the capital, Baghdad, you know, which where I was born. But, like, then at the same time, this invasion has caused sectarianism, terrorism, which was even, to be honest, even worse than the invasion itself, you know, because people killing people literally within the same country, like, you know, over identity and over sectarianism and what this guy is this from this sect and this guy from the other sect. And to be honest with you, you know, there's plenty of abductions were going on, you know. We weren't obviously allowed the house on our own, even in front of the house, like, you know, to go out in front of the house. Education was on pause, like, you know. Our school was taken over. There was, you know, a school just across the road, the primary school, that was taken over, stopped. Like, education was, as I said, was on pause. And then when the sectarianism, terrorism literally kicked in after kind of, you know, the American, I suppose, have succeeded in whatever they wanted to do, you know, things started to get really worse, absolutely worse, like, you know what I mean. I didn't see my friends in class, you know, that I went to school with. My teachers haven't a clue where they went to. Lost members of my family, now myself, you know, and I've witnessed things that I just happened to be there, just out of coincidence. You know,
so when you say witness things, What are we talking?
We're talking about, like, basically people receiving the news of their loved ones being killed, like, you know, being executed, you know.
You were only a young boy.
Yeah, I was in around, I'd say, 6 years of age, 6-7 years of age.
Right.
You know, so that's what happened there. So, look, and people, look, like, even going attending funerals, like, you had kids discussing what sect are you from, like, you know. So, like, 7-8 years of age discussing what are you, Sunni or Shia, or are you this base equivalent, are you Protestant or Catholic, like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
they're discussing that all over, and there was something there, and we're watching literally funerals, what you know, going by every single day, you know. To the extent that literally everyone in Baghdad, or majority of them, were just waiting for their coffin to be risen, like, you know. So that's really how bad it was. People getting abducted everywhere. A person gets abducted, gets asked one question, what sect are you? You know, people say if they're Sunni, he gets shot. If they're Shia, they get shot. You know, people don't know what to say at that time. So it was very, very worrying time. I was even more worrying is obviously when you didn't know who's going into the houses then, you know, because all wearing baklavas and that. And then you have Americans then going into the houses as well, trying to take houses up for basements and all that sorts of stuff, you know. So it was, and we're just, the victims are obviously the people of the country, like, you know, which is normally the case. But look, there's a lot of things to learn from it, you know, and I like turn negativity into positivity, like, you know. So that's it's all about education, really, educating people and educating future generations, like, look, this is what's happened, it's important to condone but not to take it on and keep at it, because it's not good in the interest of relations, do you know, it's not good in the interest of public policy and all that sort of thing. So it's important to condone it, it's important not to forget it, but at the same time, don't let that be a deciding factor, you know, of the overall relationship between communities, do you know.
That's a great attitude to have. Can you remember the getting out with your family, with your mother and your siblings?
So
you're the eldest, aren't you?
I'm the eldest, yeah.
Of five.
Of five boys, yeah. Yeah, I'm the eldest of five boys. So I do remember it all right, yeah. I mean, we were praying Fajr, and Fajr is the first Islamic prayer, right, of the five daily prayers. And then after that, then there was a taxi waiting outside.
Right.
And so we just went in, got the luggage and get the hell with it, you know, let's get out of here.
Right, yeah.
So
there was a window. There was an opportunity.
Pretty much, yeah, there was an opportunity there. Now, I didn't know where we were going. Do you know, like, I was like, okay, this car, you know, it's outside, okay, whatever.
And at this stage, you're nine.
At this stage, I was nine.
And what
yes.
was your youngest brother?
Two, 3 years. So, anyways, we got put in the back of the car and we're, you know, driving. We were actually driving to the borders of Iraq and Syria, you know. Throughout the way, we got stopped, I'd say, over 30 checkpoints. And every single person we had to pay in order for us to get through, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, we get to Syrian, the Iraqi-Syria border. Mm-hmm. We got to Syria then, and we went through. I slept in Syria. I slept in Damascus, and, you know, and I woke up in Istanbul. I don't know how the hell that happened. But anyways, we just got there. From Istanbul then, we come into Ireland, and we moved to Ireland, and yeah, and that's a new journey, a new life has started, a new home has been built.
What was your first impression of Ireland?
To be honest, no, the first thing that caught my attention was the air, you know, because I would have developed asthma now myself from living in Iraq after, because of the war, the environment was completely in negligence, you know. I'd often wake up, like, you know, literally orange all over the place, and color orange, and that's color orange, it's the dust, like, do you know. So you're really inhaling dust. I remember one time I wanted to get the towel, do you know, and at least try breathe something, you know, maybe something will change, or some sort of, you know, the air would change somehow, but, you know, but obviously didn't work out. But it was so bad, like, you know, I mean, the environment there, and, you know, when you wake up and you see all around and yourself orange and dust, and you're inhaling dust all the time, that's very, very bad. So when I inhaled, just literally that air went straight to my blood flow, like, you know, like, wow. That's beautiful, I said, you know. And that was the air was one. Second one obviously was obviously the weather, the air and the cold. I was like, right. I was almost like I'm on a different planet. So yeah, I was, you yeah, know, yeah. For the first minute or two. But look,
you've gotten used to it now, though.
Yeah, oh no, we got it. In fact, this is actually my favorite weather now. It was raining, believe it or not. Is, you know, I swear to God.
Is it?
Because the thing is, I'm always good when I play in Holland at rain for some reason.
All right.
You know, I love playing Holland in the rain. You know, it's just you're in a war zone. You know, you're just there and ball is dropping dead and you're just going pulling all over the place, and look, it's a zoo. I never was on, do you know, so it's yeah, but I love that, do you know. Right. I love that, like, you know, because you're in summer, you see, when you're playing Holland, the ball can be going like a bullet, like, you know, lads from the halfback line, you know, striking the ball to me, it goes over my head because of this dryness, because the water is drying, that, you know, it's bouncing, yeah. Like all, but if it's raining, the ball drops dead, you know, 65, you know, that ball's dropping, you know, they better get used for the breaking ball, you know.
Okay.
So but don't get me started, because I could talk about Holland all day.
I know, we are going to get to it, but okay, so it was the clean air and the cold temperature.
Yeah, the cold temperature, yeah. And
and then you arrived, of course, without having any English.
Oh yeah, that was a bit of an interesting one, all right, you know. In fact, I would have loved to do the Gael talk, believe it or not, or Gaelic, you know. But the thing is that when I said that, the principal looked at me and said, I mean, come on, you have to get your English first at least, you know. I was like, grand. But
good on you.
But yeah, like, yeah, I didn't have any English, like, at all. And I used to sit down, you know, like, in classes when teachers are talking, or when someone's talking to me, or says a couple of words or whatever, I'd write it in Arabic, that when you read it in Arabic, you'd pronounce it as English, and I'd go and research it and see what that was.
Okay.
For example, if you say Lovely Harlan now, right? I go and I hear it, okay, I write Lovely Harlan in Arabic. I go to Google and I start searching in English, you know, to try to find out the letters of what Lovely Harlan is,
okay,
and to see what it is, you know, what that meant. But thankfully now, I can talk.
I have
the English now, you know, and but it was certainly a challenge, because when people ask you a question there and you don't know what to answer, or people come say, could be saying hello to you and you don't have a clue what they're saying. Sorry, when I say, obviously you know what hello is, but let's say how are you keeping, for example, you wouldn't know what, I didn't know what that was. But what I done was that I got involved in every single thing. Every society.
Yeah.
You go to choir, you'll see me there. You go to drama. So I was acting Jesus Christ once in a Christmas play.
Were you?
You know, and with the sheep beside, there's a towel around my head. I don't know who the hell I was, you know. Just there for the crack. Like, you know, there to see what the story is. I'm just saying what people, what the teacher's telling me to say.
So you threw yourself into everything.
I attended mass as well. Like, you know, I was even more Catholic than some people here. But like, you know.
Fair play to you. So you were really making such an effort. How were you received? Like, what was it genuinely now? Not the what you think I want to hear answer, but how actually was it?
Well, people were lucky if you had 10 heads, like, especially if you're in the mass. Like, sure, one of the culture clashes I had. I mean, I had plenty culture clashes.
Mm.
One of them was certainly like the funerals was one, and then the other one was going to mass. So a majority of times when we're in school and mass, you know, the lads from different faiths and what who wanted to go to mass would opt in to go to study rooms, right? But I said, you know what, I want to go. Let's just go to mass, see what the story is there, you know. So I was doing all the person that actually used to go to mass, and I used to talk to the elderly fellas there as well, you know, at the mass there. So I say,
so were you genuinely interested in Catholicism? Or was
No, I wasn't. Okay. It's not as if I wanted to convert or anything like that.
Okay.
But I just wanted
to engage.
Just understand
our culture.
You know? Exactly. Understand the culture. I wanted to engage. You know,
right.
I wanted to see what people are like. Talk to me. I talk to them. Leader from me. I learn from them. That kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember once I confused the priest with the Pope, so I did. So I was like, the priest looked at me as if I was like,
what, you referred to him as the Pope?
I did, I referred to the Pope. So when he came out from the back,
surely he should have been flattered.
But he looked at me, he was like, is he just a guy messing? Like, you know, when someone gives you a look, like,
oh, right, okay, he's trying to figure it out.
Exactly,
yeah. But you were being genuine, you actually thought.
Obviously he looked like a Pope anyway, you know, with the stuff he's wearing, like, you know, with the whole robe and the whole shebang.
So what have you learned about Catholicism?
Well, I obviously learned that there's only one Pope in this world, and that's your man up in the Vatican. That's what I learned. You know, but otherwise, anyone who came out as I would have known that he was a Pope. But the thing, what's even more confusing for people is that when the priest says, "Okay, guys, just shake hands now," right?
Okay.
Do you know when at the end of the mass,
the priest will say,
"Okay,
peace be with you.
Peace be with you." You know, shake your hands. So I used to be the first person to put my hand up and shake with everyone.
Yeah.
So what happened was, I used to be full of energy. You know, like as in. How are you keeping house, like shaking hands like with people like that, and it's literally speaking to them like that, you know, hi, how are you, all good, and just, you know, very energetic and very enthusiastic.
Okay.
And they're just looking at me and they're kind of shaking my hand and kind of looking at me, giving me weird looks. Okay. That kind of look. But look, it's your look.
You're bringing your own personality to it. But you're right. It's actually pretty, when I think about it now, it's always pretty conservative, usually. You shake people's hands in church. It's been a while now since I've been in a mass. But let's speak about your own faith, because I know you have deep faith. You're Muslim.
I am indeed, yeah.
And how has that transition been for you, coming to Ireland and keeping your faith alive?
Firstly, it's a bit different, obviously, than the Middle East or than Iraq, because there's actually used to be a mosque just across the road, and you just hear it five times a day, and you just go in, so it's easier, like, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, at the time, the invasion was tough because you actually had to show your ID to get into the mosque, where the Americans had like different bases and that, and they were just checking everyone's going in and out, like, you know.
Mm.
But like, certainly, you know, kind of beforehand, like, you know, when it was, let's say, like, you know, 4 or 5 years of age, or just before we'd left, you know, you'd go to the mosques and it's easy, like, you know, because everyone stops. Do you know, like, if you're in a takeaway, person has a takeaway, a restaurant or whatever, or work, that they stop, they switch off for 15, 20 minutes and go back at it again. So that used to happen 5 times. But here, it is hard, obviously, to maintain praying 5 times a day and that, But it is manageable, do you know?
Is it a lot of self practice then, self discipline, taking out your prayer mat yourself and
exactly,
just doing it?
Yeah. So that's taking out prayer mats sometimes for people, it can be very, very interesting kind of experience, for people, you know.
Okay.
If you're traveling or you don't want to pray somewhere and you kind of pray people, you'd actually be surprised by the reaction you'd get. Like,
what kind of reaction?
Reaction would get like people would, like, I remember this time I was in Westmeath, I think it was somewhere around there anyway,
okay,
some
yeah,
petrol
yeah.
station was there, and it was during Ramadan. I was like, right, lads, and we have the, you know, let's just, you know, just pray here quick things, right? So I said, grand, and praying there, and this family walked by, and here, and with this person, the father and like, you know, the kids, his three kids I think he had, and they walk and they look at his office. Myself and a friend of mine were praying, and they go, look, I just heard him, like, look, they're praying, they said, because these kids asked, what are they, he's like, daddy, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And they're praying, you know, and then they just stood there watching, you know. So that was
fascinating.
Like, fascinating. So I thought that was great, like, you know. But then often, you know, you'd have the odd lads would be filming and videoing and all that sort of stuff, you know, and you kind of get used to it, to be honest, you know. But it's changing people's perception, like, you know what I mean? And you're making a difference at the same time that, look, this is a new and a modern Ireland, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you speak about Ramadan, like, you have trained throughout that time as well. And for those
indeed,
listening, because we've heard the term a lot, we know what a lot of us know what it entails, but there might be people listening that would be familiar but won't know what exactly it means. But one of the kind of the guidelines that you follow is that you don't eat during daylight hours. So when you're training or you're playing matches during that time, is it tough?
It is tough, yeah. It is tough. No, I have to say, especially if you're wing forward, you know.
You're using up a lot of energy.
Oh, stop, you would. You know, I mean, playing hurling itself is tough, but doing the Ramadan is obviously even tougher.
Yeah.
Ramadan, you know, you get that asked every single year, do you know? Oh, not even water. You're not allowed to eat, right? Or you're not allowed to drink any water, whatever, or any liquids from dawn to sunset. Okay.
Yeah.
And
usually at night time is when you sleep. So
pretty much,
like,
yeah,
you're limited.
Like in around 10-ish, I'd say. Like in the summertime would be certainly 10. I'd say between 10 and half 10. Now this year was a bit handy, but at the same time it was a weird one because you're working the same time and you're
this year
asleep,
was April, wasn't it?
Messed up and huh?
April
was April you? Exactly. Yeah, this year was in around April. So
and it changes every year.
It changes every year. It goes back every two. Every year goes back 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
In around that, like,
couple
of days.
It's basically a month.
Yeah, exactly. Just a month of not drinking water and not eating.
Restriction
obviously,
during the day.
Yeah. Not, obviously and not drinking and eat, not eating for the whole month. Obviously not, you know, from dawn to sunset. But the whole idea of Ramadan, right, is to feel how people in poverty feel like, you know, is to put ourselves in their shoes and basically pray to God and thank God for the blessing we have here and basically how granted we are here that I can just go to the tap with water there and switch on the tap and drink water. But other people wouldn't have that, you know, quality of life.
And when you say it like that, it actually totally makes sense that when you do then finally get to eat when the sun goes down, the food is going to taste so good because you're obviously hungry, you haven't been eating all day or you haven't been having any liquids, and you're going to be more grateful for it.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And to be honest, I mean, it really kind of changes your appetite, believe it or not. Like,
does
you
it,
know,
yeah?
It does indeed. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, you're going to have a big feast or whatever, you know, but like, you kind of get used to it. You can only need, like, literally the minute I break my fast with dates and yogurt, right, I kind of feel full straight away, to be honest, you know, believe it or not. It's actually
your body's gotten used to it probably.
I don't know how the hell that happens, right, but it just happens, like, but obviously you have nice lentil soups and all of that, you know, that the mother makes, but and some of you often know the some leek and potatoes and all that, you know, yourself. Some bread and butters, you know. But yeah, you kind of basically break my fast with a traditional crunchy Irish supper. Do you know, so...
And when it's all over, then there's a big kind of celebration, isn't that right?
There is, yeah. So that's called Eid al-Fitr, you know, which is the festival of breaking the fast, right? And that just involves people, you know, family members getting together, friends getting together and going to the mosque and praying and having a fun day and going out for some feast and that, you know.
But kind of sounds like Christmas.
It does kind of sound, well, yes, it does.
You know what I mean? In the sense that you go, some people, you know, maybe go for, if they're into it, they might go to mass or whatever it is.
Certainly, it is like Christmas.
And then they get together and they eat lovely food.
For sure.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So let's talk about your obsession, which is hurling. Yeah. You've obviously mentioned it quite a few times already, but let's talk about the first time you picked up a hurley and slitter.
Yeah. So the first time I picked up a hurling slitter was in school, in primary school. But then when I actually got properly trained or properly introduced to it was at the club level. And that was merely because some of the lads who went to school would have went to that club, you know. And so I went in there and kind of was introduced to it. And okay, here's the managers, you know. Talking to them, okay, introducing who I am, very welcome on the team, welcome on board. And the minute I picked up the hurling slitter, I was pretty much, you know, part of the team from day one, like, you know.
So was it like, did you have a natural gift for it from the get-go?
I was shite at it, absolutely useless at it, you know what I mean? So I couldn't even hold the hurl properly, like, you know.
Okay.
So it was I was just holding it like I did. Obviously, I did see a match of hurling before. Do you know, like, on TG Cahir, like I had one TG Cahir, and just looking at it, like, what's that? You know, I'm just looking at it, just did not appeal to me whatsoever. So it done.
And is there? Can I ask you? Is there any game that's similar to it in Iraq?
No,
nothing at all.
No, there isn't. No, no.
Okay,
no.
So it's totally alien to you.
Yeah.
So when you picked up first time, not holding it right, but like I've seen clips of you, you're really handy now. You're like, it's impressive.
To be honest,
to watch
no. I am getting now a lot of messages from former All-Ireland medal holders, and they're showing my videos to their dads who also coached and have All-Ireland medal holders. They go, oh, look, yeah, my father says you're pretty handy and all that sort of things. And that really means to me a lot, like, you know. I was like, Jesus Christ, no. I went from literally having a clue to even know what the hurl was, you know, to now being getting thrown out to what former All-Ireland medal holders and managers and that. This is brilliant.
And how long did it take to get good? Or to go from being not good to being all right?
It depends. Like, literally,
Were you inseparable? Like, were you constantly then with the schlitter and the hurley, just practicing all the time?
If you go and ask my secondary school teachers, right?
Yeah.
Especially the time of fifth year, of what did Bonner do at lunchtime? Every single one of them has said he was literally out there every single day
pucking
the ball against the wall. The guys came up to me and said, listen, you have to take it easy on that wall because the pain is going up. I swear to God.
Really?
Yeah. And aww. I was like, well, sure, look it. I mean, you know, it's hurling, like, you know.
and why?
It's an actual sport.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's certainly one that I love myself. How does it make you feel when you're playing?
I mean, it feels good, you know. It feels like you're a warrior on that field, like. You know, because you're there and you're getting all these 50-50 balls and you're just going in and physicals and that, you know. So I'd get stuck in, like, you know. Like, I mean, that's the whole point of Hurling. You know, like, if someone doesn't want to get stuck in on Hurling, I don't know why they're on the field in the first place, to be honest. You know, I've seen lads pulling away from 50-50 balls. You might as well just be sitting on the sideline watching the game. Like, you know, the Hurling there.
You're a risk taker.
100%, yeah. Like, yeah. The amount of times I got put on my arse by people, you know, like, literally, you know, shoulder there or whatever, or shoulder to, or barging, people barging into me, and I feel, you know, like, you just get up and you got the free, you got the point, move on, you know, go on next, do it again. but you know, it's part and parcel of the game, you know, so, like, yeah, so you do feel like a warrior, feel good, you know, and what I like even more is that, after the match, we kind of shake hands with the lads, and you know, it's like, fair play to you, lad.
You're still playing. I'm still playing
with Ballinteer St John's. Yeah. So I'm still playing with my local club, and really enjoying it. You know, enjoying every minute of it.
And alongside that, you are in the role of an ambassador. This is work that you're really passionate about as well, on diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm. So that's an AIG Dublin GA ambassador role, and it involves reaching out to minorities of non-traditional GA communities and promoting and introducing Gaelic games to them, you know, as a way for them to say, look, I can be part of it, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone who's seen me when I first moved into Ireland, they seen me as becoming a Dublin GA ambassador, you know. But hard work at the end pays off. Dedication is real, you know, belief is real. Hard work is real. It just requires times, requires commitment. You know, you have to be determined to reach the goal. Like, you know, I can't just be saying, okay. Like, if I said that when I was 14 years of age and said I want to be a WG ambassador by when I was 15 years of age, not a hope. Do you know, because it's not going to work like that. You know, because it needs more. You know, you have to show effectiveness. You know, you have to show, okay, I've done this. That's the effect. That's the change. And obviously, your GWG has seen this, what I have been doing over the last couple of years with different schools and GA clubs across the country, and said, look, you know, would love to have you in Barton to do that here in Dublin, you know, and said, no bother at all, lad. So that's then when I went in and I started to do it, you know. And every single people I've reached out, everyone out here I've reached out. I've reached out to the Muslim community in inner city, and I've reached out to the Sikh community. Like, majority of them said, you're the first person of the GA to come down to us and the Jews is GAA. Do you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. You know, and I was like, this is brilliant. I was like,
and what is the awareness of the GAA amongst those communities?
Some of them would be aware, vaguely aware. You know,
yeah.
They just see it as the Irish sport. You know, they see it as your typical, you know, lad from the country who always plays, who loves his hurling and he loves his Gaelic football. But
they don't see it as something that they can get involved with until you come along, is
pretty much, yeah.
Great.
You know?
And what has the feedback been? Is it now something that is, that more people are being encouraged to do and feeling, I suppose, welcome to do so?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's currently on work. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
you're working on it.
I mean, certainly, we're working on it. All right, you know, that's the main thing. But like, you would obviously face some resistance from people, you know, who are not open to, you know, D&I or D&I as in diversity and inclusion, you know. But look, you're always going to face that no matter where you go, you know. But at the end of the day, when you're promoting the sport, when we're promoting our culture and, you know, and our values, there isn't like none of the grounds should be in place in deciding who gets what or who gets involved in what and all of that. As in, no matter what faith you are, no matter what gender you are, etc., you know, this is our Irish culture, this is the Irish values, this is our sport, something we're proud of, this is our organisation, biggest sport organisation in Ireland, established by a great man, may rest in peace, Michael Cusack, who established it in 1884 with the four official games. Then obviously start naming them all, you know, the Gaelic football, Hurling, GA Rounders, GA Handball. And you kind of give a small history lesson. You kind of give a 5-10 minute history lesson, fun history lesson, you know, to the guys. Like, I, for example, I'd often hold the Gaelic football and say, you know, does anyone know what that is? You know, and they'd often, oh, this is Gaelic football, whatever, mm-hmm. grand, fair play. Okay, get the hurl out. And okay, does anyone know what that is? You know, and then they start, oh, we play that, we see this in school, or you know, the school plays or whatever. Then I start explaining what it is, and you know, they have a kind of fun session, and then go in and introduce the basic skills. And I swear to God, like, you know, I mean, so far, like the you know, the engagement and the response from the community, like, it's been massive, very, very supportive, like, you know, extremely supportive. Sure, I received a complaint. The first school I reached out to, right, they were like, Abu, what did you do? I was like, what? And he goes, I've received even complaints from schools, as right, in, as why did we not get invited? You know? And I was like, the communities, this is it. I was like, well, hold on a minute. Like, well, I was like, well, this is a, you know, a great complaint to have.
Yeah,
you know,
of course it is.
We'll certainly look at facilitating them on a separate day and do it. But the main thing is that we have created this relationship between the minority and the local community, you know, that opens up future, you know, it's certainly a kickstart for a very, very healthy, please God, long-lasting relationship, opens up dialogue between the two communities, you know, and that if they wanted to do a further event, now that's up to them, you know, but the thing is that we have created that relationship, you know, between the community, the local community and the minority.
And again, now we have families coming in from Ukraine, and in years to come, again, sport will be very important to make sure that people are connected and feel part of their own communities. So again, this work that you're doing is really, really important, especially if you're fleeing a very volatile situation. You certainly were, and a lot of people now, unfortunately, are as well. I suppose sport can provide escapism, and it can provide just that relief, I suppose, and sense of community and tribe that people will probably crave, I would imagine.
GAA, the GAA is a family, right, to me. Look, it's more than a sport to me. Like, I can safely say where any of the 32 counties now we go to, I have someone to talk to, do you know, true, as in, because majority would be aware of the GAA work I've been, and the GAA ambassador work I've been doing, you know.
Yeah, you were born in Baghdad and you lived there for the first 9 years of your life, and now you're here, and you keep referring to our island, you know, being Irish. Is that it? Are you Irish now through and through?
Well, I hope so. Anyways, look, like, all jokes aside, it's obviously, like, the minute I landed here is when I really kind of took the opportunity, you know, you're really in it, you're in a new home, like, you know, and I've made this opportunity, like, I've made the best out of this opportunity, and I made Ireland my home. I'm sure if I go back now to Baghdad, I'd say no one would even have a clue what I'm saying. Do you know, literally. I'm sure even when I speak Arabic and speak a different language, I still sound the same. You know, like, people.
Oh, do you? Has your accent even in Arabic changed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. I can. Like, I done Spanish, and I studied Spanish in secondary school.
Yeah.
I speak, you know, kind of, I, you know, numbers and all that sort of stuff. You know, the usual, like, numbers and verb, yeah, different verbs and that. So I say it in Spanish. So, like, you know, if I was like uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, do you know what I mean? So it's
I love it.
Do you know, that's the thing.
So everything has this flavour of an all Ireland accent.
Swear to God. Like, because I remember I done a video to the Chinese community wishing the Chinese community a happy new year.
Right. Did you speak Chinese?
I spoke Chinese, yeah. So okay. I spoke, like, the consent in Chinese. Oh yeah, I still remember the sentence. Where are you, Xinyan Kuai Lai? He said, "No, I probably know this." In that, there's like, I wish the Chinese community in Ireland happy new
okay,
Chinese year.
Yeah, right.
No, I probably butchered that up, that sentence, to be honest. But you know,
but, well, I wouldn't have a clue. But
Huarin Shashi Xinyan Kuai Lai. I hope this is 85-90% close to.
Yeah. Well, look, that
so again, so I said that, and people thought I was speaking Irish. I swear, someone commented. Like, I swear to God, you know, I was like, lad, this is not Irish. I said, this is wishing the Chinese community here a happy new year. I said, but look, it's I don't know. Like, even though I'm speaking Arabic, I mean, the mother often looks at me. She goes, "What happened to you?" Oh, stop. But look.
So come here. For some people, their dream is to be in Croke Park and to play, or to maybe get the opportunity to speak, you know, and you've done that. You made a speech
in Cork Park, you know. Something certainly a very, very proud moment for myself, actually, because it gave, like, I remember standing at that podium and I was like, right, I better not have this up now, because everyone's watching, you know. And it was very, very, I suppose,
it was there for a special occasion as well, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was very, it was for Eid al-Adha. Now, Eid al-Adha, I know, is not the same thing as Eid al-Fitr, right? There's two festivals goes on a year in the Islamic calendar, right? Mm. Eid al-Fitr was obviously the festival of breaking fast. Eid al-Adha is the festival of sacrifice. But going back to that Cork Park speech now, you know, it was a very, very proud moment, as I said, because it gave, the work I've been doing the last couple of years has been working and did reach people, and for me to address my communities. When I say my communities, I mean the Muslim community, the Arab community, the GA community, the Irish abroad, the Irish diaspora, you know, the Irish diaspora from all different parts of the globe, and also minorities here in Ireland, really did mean to me a lot, you know. Yeah. And I think I really, you know, that, I mean, for me, the Cork Park is, you know, I mean,
the Holy Grail, yeah,
the Mecca of Ireland, you know.
Yes. Have you gone back to Iraq since you left?
No.
Do you have any desire to go back?
To be honest, like, no. Unfortunately, I hope, the only thing we can do is hope and wish that things can get better. But to be honest, I don't know how people perceive me anyways once I land in Baghdad. Obviously, they have family members there. Contact has been lost. I mean, the relationship has not been that great with anyone, to be honest. Because the minute invasion happened, it was in 2003. Sectarianism, terrorism kicked in. Then after sectarianism and terrorism, you had a different revolution. Then after revolution, you had ISIS coming in. Then after ISIS, you had another revolution. You know, like, we just... It's just war all the time, you know. But I'd love to go back, hopefully one day, representing Ireland. You know, please God, as an ambassador. So I'd say that's the only time Iraq would see me, to be honest. but either way, it's good to kind of, I suppose, people fleeing war, no matter where they're from, you know, is to make use of the opportunity they have once they get put into a safe place. Like you'd have a lot of people who come into Ireland as program refugees or as refugees or asylum seekers, and they're not willing to integrate. Do you know? Now, that is, to me, a problem. They have to show lead on, you know, they're in Ireland. You know, Ireland is the place they live in. You know, they reside in Ireland, in this country. They have to show some sort of initiative, you know, to integrate within society. Like, whether that be through sports, whether that be through education, whether that be going out, talking to the neighbour, seeing how he is or how she is, sharing food, you know, all that sort of stuff. And not just sit down and contemplate in life. Because, you know, you're here, there's a new life here for you. You know, there's an opportunity there that millions of people across the world don't have. So make use of it. Like,
and I suppose fear is a factor, isn't it, for people? Maybe being afraid to step out of their comfort zone or to get involved with the community, because it's alien. If you've come from a different culture, it is hard to adapt a new one. But you say, step through that fear and just go for it.
That's true, yeah. Step, because otherwise you're going to sit there for the rest of your life.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like, you'd have, like, I've engaged with a couple of, you know, some refugees at this stage across the country, like, you know, different, yeah, like, direct visions and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there are some people out there who are just not, just sitting there and not doing nothing, like, you know. As I said, this is a problem, like, you know, because at the end of the day, like, go out and do something. Do you know, don't be sitting down there playing snooker all day, do you know, or doing all that sort of, just go out, talk to different people from different backgrounds, you know. Like, I'm not saying there's something wrong talking to people from your own background, do you know, but, like, at the same time, that won't, this is not going to get you anywhere in terms of integration wise.
Yeah, okay.
So the first thing I actually, you know, the first thing when I first came, as I said, I got put in the group of all country lads. So go on and do. So like, I'm delighted, I'm sure I was. So I was just there and I created such a strong bond to this day, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know yourself with the GAA, there's a lot of piss taking going on in that.
Yeah.
That is, that's, you know, part of the culture. Like they say, you know, to be Irish, you have to, you know,
take a slag and a given.
Well, not even take a slag and give one, but you have to create an extra a layer of skin. So I can gladly say I've created five of them. We have five of them each, you know. So
yeah,
yeah. So that's, you know, to step out of your comfort zone. Nothing's gonna come up to you sitting down in the chair there playing snooker all day.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not just snooker. You know, you've table tennis, all these different sports and that. But I mean, but the whole idea behind this is that, just, you have to engage. Just go in and engage, for God's sake. No, do you know? So that's, you know,
so just go out and engage.
Yeah, just, you know, literally talk to people, like.
Yeah. And come here, are your brothers like you?
I'm like a black sheep in my family, Shane.
Are you?
Yeah, no one's like me.
Before I let you go, what would your ideal day look like?
I don't know. It's like my ideal day is like a box of celebrations. Swear to God, yeah. No, I don't know what's going to come out. Could come out a Mars bar, Twix, I don't know. Sometimes a Bounty. Do you know? That's my ideal day.
Just to have a box of celebrations.
As in, you know, like it's a simulate for.
As in, I'm like,
obviously, I don't carry a box of celebrations with me, of course not.
I'm like, is he literally saying he wants a box of chocolates?
So
basically, you like life to surprise you.
Are you saying, what do I do on a daily basis?
No. I was asking you what your dream, your perfect ideal day would be.
Okay.
So you gave me the example of a box of celebrations, and I was trying to figure out whether you actually meant it literally, but you were actually using it metaphorically.
Okay, lots of
translations.
Miscommunication.
I might just leave this in, though. It's quite funny. What would your ideal day look like?
Well, my dream day would look like... I'd hope as a hurling in Cork Park. Like I can never get enough of Cork Park, you know. Like when you're in Cork Park, it's a different feeling altogether. Or poking a ball with Colin Lynch in Cork Park. So that could be another one.
Have you met him?
No, not yet, no. I've actually gotten a phone call with him once.
Okay.
And I was like, what, is this Colin Lynch? And I was like, are you actually the lad, Colin? You know, and I was like, yeah, because he goes, yes, Colin Lynch here, whatever. So I did speak to him via the phone once, for sure. But I haven't got to meet him face to face yet. But, like, before my hurling matches, you know, I actually put out Colin Lynch videos before, you know, to look at it and kind of get me warmed up a bit, you know.
So like, the dream day is meet him and then play in Croker on the same day.
Well, play
and then
Holland
have a box
him.
Of celebrations afterwards. Perfect.
That's the one. I don't know why it's taking too long to answer this.
Come here, it's brilliant to talk to you.
Sure, look, absolutely.
And best of luck in all your endeavours. I'll be following you and all you're doing, and no doubt you will reach your goal of becoming a diplomat. So,
Irish diplomat, hopefully one day representing Ireland in the Middle East and internationally. Please God, no.
Good on you. Thanks a million for being here.
No bother at all. Thank you, Gore Mila Maha. Good now. I'm Sheila.
Mila Fadze.
Toa she shingo ma.
Chainta. Fair play, Rich.
Fair play to you, no.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please share it with friends, family, or on social media. And you can support it in all the usual ways by clicking follow, giving a rating, or leaving a little comment. Thanks a million. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.